COTA has turned up the frequency. Buses are running more often across Central Ohio. Starting this September, you'll see expanded weekend service on the east and north sides, including Easton and Polaris corridors. Plus, there are added weekday trips downtown from New Albany, Canal Winchester, and Tuttle. It's more service, more connections, and more ways to move across the city. Discover the enhanced schedule at COTA.com/service changes. That's COTA.com/service changes.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to the After Further Review podcast. I'm Pete Doherty, along with Eric Baranchek, and we're here to talk about the Green Bay Packers regular season opener for 2025, a 27-13 win over the Detroit Lions. Eric, let's get right to it. Micah Parsons, go with it.
Wow. You know, you sure looks good in green and gold, doesn't he? Way better than white and that puke blue. I like it a lot.
He's just it just makes such a difference to the big question I had about the Packers. I thought they were going to be a really good team this year. And if things came together and some guys, improved as the season went on, they could be right there. That's a lot of things that have to go right. But the one thing I wondered about was whether they had enough elite players. Jordan Cooper's one of them. He's that kind of guy, I think. But this guy is top shelf talent. This is as good as it gets. And those are the kind of guys who, man, they win games. They get those sacks and pressures, in playoff games and in games you got to win. Not always, but they just give you such a better chance. I don't know that the talent just leapt off the field, even though he only played 30 snaps.
Oh, right off, you're right. Right out of the chute. I mean, the biggest play wasn't even the sack that he got, but it was the interception by Evan Williams when he got pressure on Goff there and had to dump that ball out of there early. And Evan Williams came with the interception, and that's probably the piece that. You get really excited about the sacks and all that, but it's what's the pressure causes after you get after that quarterback and move that quarterback around a little bit. So that was really good stuff. And when I looked at it again and for like a third time, he was harassing that quarterback right away. Not every single down, because that's just not normal, but. It was really, really solid right out of the chute. And what his ability to get small and turn that corner on big tackles. And, he's fast, but yet has an uncanny ability to work work the edge of guys and still play with power. And that is that's something that is very rare.
I just checked this because I wish I would have thought of this when I was – writing our column, but because you talked about how the pressure and it made Goff get rid of that ball real quick and Williams intercepted, but it just seemed like there were a lot of checkdowns and a lot of balls coming out really fast. So what do you think of these numbers? The average per catch for the Lions was 7.3, the Packers 11.8. That is a huge difference, a 4-yard difference. If you don't check out NFL stats a lot, it might not seem like much, but that's a huge difference. 7.3 is a really low number. I mean, that's, running backs, that's what they average per catch, a good running back, a receiver and running back. So that's a really low average per catch.
Right.
That means he was getting not that ball out, just trying not to get sacked, trying to get it out fast, trying to avoid a bad play.
Well, it's another indictment too of how good that the secondary played. I mean, they had things covered up, and he had nowhere else to go with the ball. There was a lot of short passes to the running backs. A lot, some by design. I'll give them that. But there was the secondary played really good, and that's kind of a symptom when you have that low of a number. That's a symptom of your secondary. Having you only have two or three guys to have to deal with back there. If you look at the receiving, Montgomery had four. which I think he's usually better out of the back, but he had out of the backfield, he had four for 4.5 yards. You know, and even the, you know, the guys who got the, you know, the Tesla had the one long one there, but there wasn't a lot there. And you're right. He had to get rid of it and dump it off and throw it into spots that he really wasn't looking for to do because of the pressure they had all game long.
So Parsons played, you know, I know he moved back and forth from the ends. I'm trying to remember, did he line up inside at all? When I went through the game, when I went to the tape, I don't remember seeing it. Do you remember seeing him lining up inside at all?
Yeah, he had one rep that was above the, or right around the center, like a one technique. Yeah, and he was both sides of the ball, and we would expect them to bolster that package a little bit more as the season goes on when they have some time with them and get them working in there. I would even think to see him coming from the second level as a stand-up linebacker at times. He did it at Dallas, you know, why not?
Yeah, well, I'm sure I have to think he will be. You know, I do think they played the guy too much. 30 snaps was too many. I think they took a big risk there in getting him hurt in his first game back. I would have been under 20 if I were them. They had him out
there. 100%.
They had him out there in the fourth quarter when the game was, you know, I know coaches are paranoid about that. And, you know, last night's game can tell you how things can go with Buffalo, and Baltimore shows you how things can go awry. But, man, I'd have had him out of there, you know, later in the, like right after that sack. I think I might have yanked him right after the
100%. Sack. 100%. I would have said, all right, sit down. You did enough today. Because, you know, the worst thing that could have happened for this whole thing is, you know, you pull a hammy or a groin, and now he's out for 4 weeks and everybody's, you know, deflated. And not only that, but the time when you're not on the field to be able to put together different packages and different schemes and to work with that coaching staff to get him what he really, really likes to do and what the other guys are able to do too around him. I mean, you saw what it did for the other players. Not only the confidence that it exudes to that entire defense, but like you were alluding to earlier is you got Xavier McKinney at the second, at the back end there. That's pretty good. Is he a superstar? I don't know. You can make that argument, but he's really good, right? I think we can all agree that he's really good. And you look at the linebacker level, you got an elite player in Cooper and Quay Walker, you know, maybe his best game as a Packer yesterday, you know, so that kind of, but still you got Cooper there. And now you got a guy at the defensive line level. So you got a star at every spot, and that's like, you know, we were scratching our heads at the beginning of the season. You know, how is this defense going to be a Super Bowl caliber defense when there's just not enough stars? And now they got it, and it looks like it could be for, you know, a few years. So the impact is far beyond just getting a sack once in a while. It's the way that teams have to be able to keep running backs and tight ends in. And you saw the way the Packers played with Aiden Hutchinson. You know, he was getting chipped and beat up by Tucker Kraft all game long. So, but then when Tucker Kraft does that, he can't, you know, he's really taken out of the pass pattern because the only thing he can run is a little arrow or something in the flat.
Yeah, and actually, you know, just my impression watching the game live and then even going through the tape again was, you know, Parsons had the big sack and he did, you know, get the ball out too quickly and Williams made the pick, but he has an impact on, these guys have an impact on everybody around them because of that attention they draw. He's basically, you know, the Packers, he's their Aaron Donald, and the Rams rode Aaron Donald to a Super Bowl a few years ago. Those star guys can make such a big difference. You know, and there are stars and then there are superstars. And I think this guy is a superstar. I mean, I talked with a scout a high ranking scout for another team who, when they made the deal, he said he considered him the best defensive player in the league. Thought he was a little bit better than the guy from Cleveland. So, I don't know.
For sure. I think
really, really interesting times. I'm, you know, Myles Garrett's maybe a better pure defensive end, but this guy's a better pure overall player and can move around more. That was
the impact that he brings to the game is greater than Myles Garrett.
So, enough about Micah Parsons, I guess. What'd you think of the rest of the defense? I mean, he played 30 snaps, so that was less than half the game. Anything jump out to you about the Packers defense overall? Well, I know there is something in the run defense. What did you make of that? I think the Lions running backs, those are two good backs, Montgomery and Gibbs, and they had 44 yards on 20 carries. Big concern, right?
Huge concern. I mean, that was coming into the game was going to, you know, I think you and I were sitting there. It was like, ooh, how are they going to handle this run game without Kenny Clark? And what made Kenny Clark so special was that his ability to eat up two blockers. You know, when they double teamed him, it wasn't one guy sticks with him, the other guy bounces off to a backer. They had to account for him. And, he wasn't super flashy in the passing game like Aaron Donald, but what he did in the run game was eat up blockers. And that's really important for your second level players. You know, when your defensive line is sitting in your lap at 3 yards off the ball, it makes it awful hard to scrape around and make tackles. And you saw yesterday the way that entire defensive line played. I mean, there were times where it was a complete stalemate at the line of scrimmage, and that's a win for the defense, because now the linebackers can flow up and down the line of scrimmage to make plays. I mean, how many times was Edgerrin Cooper on the opposite end of the formation with two tight ends, you know, on that unbalanced look that they ran, and be able to make a play almost on the boundary on the other side of the field? You can't do that when you got to climb over defensive tackles and offensive linemen that are downfield like that. I mean, it makes it really hard. And the other part I thought was really, really exciting was the speed at which the defense played with, especially in the run game. I mean, you saw safeties coming up and shooting gaps. You saw linebackers flying all over the place, and a lot of gang tackling, even out on the perimeter when they tried to screen, either when they do wide receiver screens or a traditional screen with linemen out there. You saw a lot of speed to get to the ball. And I think another year with Halfley, with him being able to work that group, because you saw it kind of crescendo through the season that the defense got better and better and better. And now that they have a couple more pieces in place and a second year Edgerrin Cooper, and second year Bullard and Evan Williams, and adding in Micah Parsons to that mix. Wow. It could be something really good.
Yeah. When we were talking on the phone, I told you about that anonymous quote I had read from a scout several years ago saying, basically, if you have fast linebackers, you have a fast defense. What do you think of that? Cause you talk about how fast they played, and that, you know, they've got Walker and Cooper. That's, you know, I don't know that anybody's got faster off-ball linebackers than those two guys. There might be some teams that have as fast, but I don't know if there's anybody's faster.
I don't know. I think they're both 4 or 5 guys, aren't they?
I think so. Yeah.
Yeah. And what you like about Cooper? What Cooper brings to the table that Quay Walker doesn't is that instinct in the run game. You know, where Quay Walker is generally, you know, run away from him if you want to, because he'll run you down. And generally, you want to run right at him. And you saw yesterday during the game, we both commented that, you know, he came out of nowhere on a couple, and it pressed the line really nice and made a tackle at the line of scrimmage, which is unique for him. So, you know, some of that stuff just kind of wears off. And I think that coordinator and DeMarcus Covington, the D-line coach, and the run game coordinator, it jumped off the field yesterday after the second series. It's like, this just looks different than it did last year, and so far so good.
So who do you think who had the best game on the D-line, because those guys are key to keeping those linebackers free? Who do you think played best there?
Well, if you want to go by sheer production, Devontae Wyatt, because he had the sack. He had a couple of really nice tackles where they got off the line of scrimmage, or he got off the block and make a tackle. I thought Wooden did, I think in preseason I was thinking this guy might have been the odd man out of the lot. But man, did he play well. You know, he put on some weight in the offseason, and it's certainly doing him well and servicing himself well. And what I didn't see from him in the past that we saw really good yesterday is when that double team happens, that he dropped that inside knee. And what that does is it gives you another point on the ground so that you don't give up ground and have, you know, get back into linebacker depth. Really good. So if I had to tip my hat, just say for stats, why I'd say Devontae Wyatt, what a heck of a day he had, and follow that really closely with 1A being Wooden. We even saw the Rook in there. You know, I don't think he played bad. You know, yeah, so that was
eight snaps.
That was a luxury that this team had when you get a undrafted free agent at a very good price and get in there and get production in week one. Come on, that doesn't happen very often. And man, he is stout inside there. Probably the only thing he's going to give you in the passing game is a really stout bull rush. But man, you know, in running downs, he's like moving a boulder inside there.
Yeah, I think he's going to end up being an important niche player for them this year because of that. I think they're going to need him in there to stop the run. They're just, you know, guys get hurt and you got to eat up a lot of snaps. And I still think I was a little surprised Detroit didn't, their initial game plan wasn't to just run it right down the Packers' throat. And I was a little surprised that wasn't what they did coming right out of the gate. They had their share of inside runs, but I wondered if they would just try to keep hammering the Packers in there and hammering them.
Yeah, me too, especially with the history that this team's had and as many times that they played them. They know where the soft spots are, but I think it got covered up with the way the D-line was playing. I mean, those guys, and even off the when they tried to run off the edge, you know, that just showed the defensive speed that they had and the way the secondary came up. And you know, you saw Nixon come in there and mix it up and run plays. And you know, when was the last time you saw a cornerback 5 yards deep in the backfield making a tackle when he wasn't blitzing? I mean, that was really good stuff. And even Bullard shot in on a run play a couple times, and I thought he held up really good at the linebacker depth when they were in nickel and needed him to come into the box. I thought it was just really crisp when their run fits were really sound, or there wasn't any like sometimes I thought in the past last year at the beginning of the season some of the run fits just weren't sound, and there it seems like that's all cleaned up now.
Let's jump to the other side of the ball. What'd you think of Jordan Love first game? You know, it wasn't spectacular, certainly 188 yards passing. What'd you see?
Oh, I saw efficiency. I saw, you know, you take two plays away, the one where the interception got called back off, and the play prior to that probably should have been picked. But other than that, you saw efficiency you saw standing in the pocket, waiting for things to develop if they needed to, and not forcing much, you know. So that was, you know, that's really good. And he had two, you know, arguably bad drops. You know, there was the one in the corner near the end zone to Dobbs that he dropped it, and he had his hands on it at least. And then, of course, Jaden Reed. They should just throw Jaden Reed the ball first play of the game just to get the drop out of his – just drop it. Just get it out of your system. Because, man, you know, that's the one player that this offense is going to need to step up is going to be Jaden Reed. And, you know – great receivers. That was the one of the things that went through my mind when Dobbs missed that one, was great receivers come down with that ball. I mean, look, did you see DeAndre Hopkins for the Ravens last night with that one-handed grab? That's what great receivers do. They go up and get the ball and fight through it. And, you know, both of those guys are going to have to get more efficient catching the football. And Jaden Reed is the one guy on that side of the ball that they need him. Because if they start putting a lot of pressure on Golden, who's going to struggle, you're going to see him struggle just because of the fact he's a rookie. So he's going to be not so much dropping the ball, but, you know, being in the right spot and picking up all the reads. We saw yesterday that he wasn't exactly excited about blocking. So you know, that's going to take something.
I didn't notice that. Is he not an enthusiastic blocker?
Not really. And that's one of the things that makes this football team good is that you want to get a long run, a 20-yard run, or you want to catch a ball at 10 yards and take it to the house. It needs downfield blocking. And the receivers are going to have to do it. But it was his first game playing against real live, which is cranked up a couple notches from practice or even when they do the joint practices and preseason games. I mean, it's not the same as an NFL Sunday. So, you know, that'll remain to be seen because he's a little slighter than most of the other receivers out there. So those guys do a great job blocking. It'll be interesting to see when he's got to go block a linebacker again and see how that works. But Jordan Love. I thought he played. I mean, what was his quarterback rating? 128.6. 16 of 22, two TDs, and a long throw. I liked it. I thought. But again, he looked efficient. He looked calm, and some of that goes, you know, to the way that offensive line performed in the pass protection. Holy smokes! I mean, there were times back there. I mean, he had 4 or 5 seconds. Against a defense that came in after last season, and they were pretty good again. You know, even when Hutchinson wasn't playing.
Yeah, so. He's an outstanding player, at least was before he got hurt. But he was invisible in this game. He had no tackles, one quarterback hit.
That's it.
Yeah,
that's the only stat that he made yesterday, and they did a really good job with Tucker Kraft. Chipping him and making first contact, and then now he slowed up a little bit. Now, you know, Tom could come and clean him up, or Walker on the other side too. So, but I think, you know, it was just masterful of the way, most importantly, the way that they protected it from the guard, center guard, and kept that pocket clean all game long. I mean, he only got hit twice.
So I'll put you on the spot here because I added this up. Hutchinson had 19 rushes. How many times do you think they either chipped or doubled him?
15.
Not quite that many. 11.
No, still a lot. Wanted to get deep downfield, that's what you do.
Yeah, and there were. Twice he ran stunts, so that kind of muddies up what, you know, it's hard to tell sometimes what their plan was when they run a stunt. And they went one-on-one with him 5 times, and I think I counted on 3 of those where the ball came out really fast. One was a hot read, and 2 were hitches. So where the ball's coming out so fast that, you know, the pass rush isn't a factor. They also ran a boot his way, so they left him unblocked. So they basically only blocked him on an island where the quarterback was going to hold the ball. It was either 2 or 3 times. So they did not give him a chance to make much of an impact. Did he look any different to you, though? He's coming off. He broke both his tibia and fibula last year. That ended his season. Did he look any different to you?
He didn't look like as explosive as he has been in the past. Some of that, again, first game. So, you know, it's about the trust factor, right? And how do you trust it? After something that was a pretty catastrophic injury. So it's probably going to take him. It's probably more so mentally than it is physically, but I would expect, I mean, he's a stud player. I expect by the end of the season, he's going to be firing on all 8 cylinders.
Let's such a quick turnaround this week. Let's start talking about, or let's start thinking about Thursday night
against Washington.
Yeah. So I don't know if you saw, but Banks and Tom, like Rob Domofsky of ESPN, had a report that Tom looks iffy for playing Thursday. He has a hip injury, and I believe Banks would not have practiced today also. They didn't practice, but they have to do a projected injury report, and I believe they said he would not have practiced because he has an ankle injury. What do you think of that? Possible 2 linemen out. 2 starting offensive linemen out with such a quick turnaround. They got Jordan Morgan to take one of those spots. And I think the new guy is going to have to take the other. That would be my guess is Darian Kennard, the lineman they traded for from the Eagles. What do you, what do you make about that? What kind of challenges are they facing if they've if they're missing one or both of those guys?
Well, my guess is that Banks will be playing. That would be my first guess. But I think they can do enough. I think where they would be suffering would be in the run game. But I think in the pass game, you can soften up those D tackles and soften up the defensive end lines by short, quick passes, making those guys run around the perimeter and getting those guys in pursue and tire them out a little bit. And then that'll help. As you saw how it happened against Detroit, I mean, they were hell bent for election to stop the run. That front was just charging the line of scrimmage. They were not going to give up the run. And by the end of the game, you get a little tired. Your scoreboard's not looking like it's going in your favor. So that's when they can kind of salt the game away with the running game. And you saw that really kind of take hold in the fourth quarter. So I would expect something similar that we saw on Sunday, and there would be, but I would probably come out of the gate firing a little bit with screen passes and things like that, and jet sweeps, and trying to incorporate. Or not allow that defensive line to get the upper hand early.
A whole different challenge at quarterback with a guy who can really run besides being a good passer. I wonder, is this a game where Parsons is especially valuable because he's a guy who can chase him down? Well, now they have a couple of them. They'll have two linebackers who can run with this guy and now a defensive end too. So that's three guys in the front seven who can run with this guy.
I think compared to years past that this would be the best that they are equipped to be able to handle a guy like that. Because you got two linebackers that are, four or five guys that can run them down. Now Cooper is probably more of the guy that you might want to blitz a little bit, where seven is just a flat line speed guy, and then maybe have him do the spying. And he's done a good job in the past when they've had been having to face that type of look. So I think it's a completely different challenge from what they faced last week with a statue. So they're going to have to, do the same thing that we've seen them do, rush upfield, hem him in, and if he sneaks out, you got to have a spy. That's going to be either in coverage, playing the low hole, or just literally spying him, at 5 or 6 yards, and just mirroring where he goes.
Can Parsons rush like he does? You don't want to go too deep because then you open up a lane for the guy to leak out and go, and run. Can he do his normal rushing, or is that going to take a little of the juice out of him too? Cause he's got to be, more contained.
Well, that's what makes it so great is they can line him up inside. I think, when he played for the Cowboys, he was all over, or you can bring him from a linebacker spot. So you have a lot more flexibility. It'd almost be better to have him coming from the A gap or B gap, from somewhere inside running twists and things like that. And, trying to hem in, or have him come from one direction and just have the defensive end from the other direction. Hey, your job is to get 4 yards upfield and don't get beat around the end. And that's a tough call for Gary because he really likes to turn his shoulders and, that he's susceptible to getting beat off the end. So that's going to be a good challenge. It would be fun to see them in a look where they have, Van Ness on the outside and moving Gary and moving Micah Parsons around and then having one of the big dudes in the middle there just kind of keep the pocket from getting out of control. Because that's not so bad if he runs off the edges. What's really bad is when he starts getting upfield. You don't want him to turn north and south in a hurry. So you want him to run to the boundary. That's where he's least dangerous.
So is that stuff you can do? The guy's only been, this is only his second week with the team, second week in the system. They're not even practicing this week. They're just doing walkthroughs. Is that simple enough where they can dial that kind of stuff up, or is that, overcomplicating things and maybe setting yourself up for a big mistake or a disastrous play, where guys aren't, where the chemistry and the timing just isn't there?
Not with a athlete like that. you can line him up anywhere and say, go get the quarterback. And that would assume that that's kind of what we're going to see.
Yeah. Wonder how many snaps he'll play, if they'll go 30 again, or if they'll keep it lower.
I don't know. You know, this is the game where it's scary for injury-wise.
Right,
you know?
Yeah, exactly. Fatigue.
And not, yeah, and soft tissue injuries, you know, hamstrings and groins and calves and things of that nature. You know, coming off of a 3-day rest, and then you're back at it again. I don't know. I think it would kind of see how the game goes and how, you know, how efficient they are on offense. If they can keep the defense off the field, that would really help the situation a lot better.
So it's, we don't have a kicker. We can't talk. It's really not worth talking about the kicker anymore. What are we going to do for our closing fund
this year? I have no idea. I think we got to pick out someone that is a who does something either really stupid or I guess the second worst player on any football team, the punter. But I tell you what, that guy, he launched a couple of bombs on Sunday.
That's what he was. He did a. He had a lot of punts like that in camp. He had a. You know, when I didn't chart, nobody was charting him this year. From what I can tell, reporters only do that when there's a competition. But he was consistently hammering the ball really well during training camp. As well as I've seen any punter hit it since, I don't know, probably Craig Hendrick, I would say.
Yeah, and then I think that punt that they fielded on the 8-yard line. I mean, a lot of times when guys are boomers like that, you know, that's a really tough, tough thing to ask for your guy to, hey, now I need you to, you know, you can't boom it here. You gotta lay off. And you can't carry it. You can't carry the water hazard. You got to lay up on it. And boy, what a punt. And so that's kind of a weapon. You know, they got him back there at the 8-yard line, and you saw what happened there. And they got him out of there. You know, they had to punt from the back of their end zone. I mean, that's good stuff. And that actually helps your football team a great deal.
54.7 gross, 48.3 net. Those are both, exceptional numbers. Now, punting in Green Bay is tough. You know, it gets tougher as the when the fall weather and then the winter hits and the ball doesn't fly as well. But
he's going to have to put on a wool sock so he can make sure he got a little extra cushion to nail that rock.
That's pretty good, though. So, well, Eric, I think we've covered a lot of ground here. So I think we'll wrap up our first show of the year. But just want to thank everybody for tuning in and for downloading us. Glad you think we're worth your time. And remind you that we'll be back again. Now, this will be with the Thursday night game. It'll probably post Saturday morning. Our show will post as well as our column. So be sure to check it out then.
Brew up some coffee and listen to us babble for a half hour.
Yeah, good way to spend a Saturday morning, right?
Get absolutely. All right. Wear a jacket because it's probably going to be chilly. But
yep, now you're talking. So until then, everybody, just want to say thanks again and remind you that you've been listening to the After Further Review podcast. For Eric, I'm Pete. Take care, everybody.
Coda has turned up the frequency. Buses are running more often across Central Ohio. Starting this September, you'll see expanded weekend service on the east and north sides, including Easton and Polaris corridors. Plus, there are added weekday trips downtown from New Albany, Canal Winchester, and Tuttle. It's more service, more connections, and more ways to move across the city. Discover the enhanced schedule at coda.com/service changes. That's coda.com/service changes.
Cleveland is where the urban meets the outdoors, where cultural celebrations meet rabid sports fans meet the symphony, where nobody goes hungry and everybody loves music. Fueled by passion, we are the land for life. From rich history to hidden gems, the Legends of the Land podcast shares the real stories from real Clevelanders that shape the city. From iconic chefs to grassroots changemakers, sports heroes to creative visionaries, learn why living all out is in Cleveland's DNA. Go to thisiscle.com/podcast.